He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday. It is the midweek edition of the Best Stocks Now show with the professional money manager, Bill Gunderson, and Barry Kite, chartered financial analyst. Barry, we've got a bounce. We've got a big bounce today. It's our job to pick that bounce apart and see if it's real, if it's short covering, if you know, the all clear signal has been sounded. Right. I'll just give you my observations here in a moment. I've been through a lot of charts here so far this morning, a lot of news. Dow up 630 points. Of course, it was up 600 yesterday at one point in time, too. And it ended down 180. The market has just been all over the map. The Dow is cleared down at 33,262 and not in a very good trend overall. The S&P is up 88 today. We're looking at about a 2% bounce today across the board. 42.59 on the S&P 500. It remains in a pretty bad downtrend also overall. Not today, but overall. NASDAQ up 337. You know, I've looked at it so far. It's pretty tepid. Maybe it gets better during the day. I'm seeing a lot of short covering and playing around in the momentum stocks, etc. NASDAQ at 13,134. Small caps up 2% today. Crude oil, there's your big mover today. That's probably moving the market. Crude oil's down $5.23 to $118.47. Have we hit peak crude oil prices? We'll talk about that today. Gold pulling back today quite a bit, under 2,000 again. It's down $48 per ounce after its big move yesterday. Silver's down 47 cents today. And the 10-year, there's a big move there. 10-year up to 1.92. That's helping the financials today. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show. With professional money manager Bill Gunderson, chartered financial analyst Barry Kite. Barry, here's my assessment so far. I would say I looked at many of the major technology stocks so far. I'm seeing a lukewarm move in the stocks. Okay, it's not like, okay, we're going in there and we're really buying. It has the look more of short covering and nibbling maybe a little bit. I looked at the oil and gas sector, and what I saw across the board, I would sum up with mild profit-taking. I looked at the bank and financial stocks. We do have interest rates up today. I would say it's a very lukewarm bounce there in the Bank of America's of the world and the other financials. The fertilizer stock, second day in a row of a sell-off. But I see no relief in sight as far as supply. Gold, you've got some mild profit taking there. There's a good bounce. If I were to pick one area of the tech sector that looks the best, it would be the semiconductor sector. But, man, I'll tell you what, that sector has just been absolutely trashed here recently. So that's my early take on what is happening, and we've got a full day ahead of us. Yesterday, Barry, the market was all over the place. We had Joe Biden.
Very different than when we started the day yesterday.
Yeah,
right?
We were way, way down in the futures, and then we went up, and then President Biden announced the no more buying of Russian oil. Of course, that takes several months. It's not like we're stopping today because there's a lot that was in transit. There's a lot that's in the port. It's going to take really several months to phase that out. But I think the biggest news out of that came no substitute, okay, other than us grinning and bearing it and sucking it up because there was no alternative announced to replace that Russian oil. And then all of a sudden we saw a huge rally in the market, obviously on some kind of news. I looked all over the place. There, it's usually a rumor of some sort, and I think it was. There was some talks that Zelensky was ready to give in to Russia's demand and call off the dogs. But I don't know. That was in the Jerusalem Post. The Prime Minister of Israel visited both countries over the weekend trying to broker some kind of a peace deal. And he was talking about it when he got home in Israel, saying, you know, they're talking. There's more going on than we realize in trying to resolve this without further conflict. That could have been what moved the market. But then 500 points disappeared just like that. You know, there comes, I put my whiplash neck brace back on. Yeah, and we finished down 180 by the end of the day. So, you know, we'll just have to see where this ends up. We got as high as $130 per barrel on oil over the weekend. We got pretty high yesterday. We finished at 124, and right now we're down at 118 per barrel. And what you would call a roller coaster session.
Yeah. And today's kind of, yeah, today I think kind of the theme I'm getting is kind of the word counterintuitive. I mean, you've got, of course, you know, kind of things working opposite that your kind of your common sense would think in terms of, you know, we've got a CPI number coming out tomorrow that's likely going to be big. Some are calling, you know, potentially, you know, in the 8% range. You've got gold down, and then, of course, you've got, you know, no real new supply, even though, did, you know, cut off Russia, and so you've got crude oil down. I think Biden's going to announce some new cryptocurrency policy today, and Bitcoin's up almost 9%. You would think
leaked. leaked.
Yeah, and you would think that, you know, of course, the biggest worry for cryptocurrency for the last, you know, handful of years has been regulation, right? And so, you know, Bitcoin's up on regulation news. And then you've got, you hit it on the head. We got the 10-year at, you know, 1.9 while the NASDAQ is, you know, sitting, you know, up 2.7% today.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a, you know, kind of a very counterintuitive when I'm looking at the charts and markets today.
Yeah. When I see a day like today, I step back and look at the big trend, and you're going to get days like today. And you always say, well, is this the turnaround? I don't really see any reason why it would be. Now, the biggest news I would say impacting the energy markets, Europe announced yesterday or last night that they have enough fuel to get them through the winter. So I suppose that put the natural gas and the oil stocks into reverse and the price of the commodity. Consider that the French market was up 5.2% overnight and the German was up 5.4% overnight. They're the ones that would suffer the most if Putin were to cut off that energy supply. But they announced that they have enough energy to last through the winter. So that took off the a big unknown. But there still is an unknown whether or not Putin will strike back and close down the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, which they're dependent upon. And I'm going to talk a lot today about what the oil companies are saying about Biden's speech yesterday, what Canada is saying. And right now there's a big oil conference going on down in Houston, and a lot of the execs are saying, because, you know, basically President Biden blamed the war and the greedy oil companies for the big rise in oil and took no responsibility whatsoever himself and said, you know, there's a lot of questions to check out there. He said there's no truth to the that they're not issuing permits and not allowing these companies to increase production. And of course the oil companies, they have their side of the story. So we'll try to work our way through that. In the meantime, China has totally come to Russia's aid. They're buying their oil at discount prices. They're buying their gas, their metals at discount prices. And they have 100% have Russia's back, and that's not a good sign, really. China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi said earlier this week that the China-Russia ties remain rock solid. So, you know, two of the biggest brutal empires in the world, representing a large part of the population of the world, are definitely in cahoots with each other and buddy-buddy, while the rest of the world, you know, is against Russia. Well, more companies pull out, Starbucks. You know, these Russians are going to feel the pinch big time. Pepsi, Yum is gone. McDonald's is closing down many stores there in the Ukraine, or no, in Russia. There's not going to be much left on the shelves there in Russia. I think the people, too, are starting to rise up a little bit. Okay, when we come back, we're going to look at the oil crisis, where the truth lies, what each side is saying, what our analysis is. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back on this big, 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 big energy crisis situation. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Let's look at both sides of the issue going back and forth between the oil producers and the price of oil and what's going on in the oil markets, what the government is saying. Well, 8%, here's the fact, 8% of American imports of oil and refined products, or 672,000 barrels a day, came from Russia last year. You know, there's a chart, too, in the Seeking Alpha article today, Barry, that shows there was absolutely no Russia oil coming into America between 2013 and 2020. There's a nice graph of that. The oil started coming back in from Russia about the beginning of 2020, and about 8% of our oil came from Russia last year. Okay,
well,
and so now
during that period we were net exporters. I wonder,
we were net exporters
for some of those. Certainly for some of those years,
we were not. The graph shows zero coming in from Russia. Now either Seeking Alpha's graph is wrong.
No, I believe that graph because during that time, of course, fracking was beginning to take off, and at some of that point, the U.S. was a net exporter of oil versus prior to that for years and years and years we were a net importer.
So you can go to the the listeners can go out to that Seeking Alpha article today. There's a graph showing oil imports from Russia dating back to 2010, and it shows it all coming to a halt about 2013, and then no Russian oil coming in until 2020 when we started importing Russian oil once again. Now, here's the two sides, okay? I looked at, as I thought about what would be the replacements, I tried to find the answer to, let's say we did strike up the Keystone Pipeline once again. And I tried to find the answer to how long would it take. It's almost impossible to find that answer. But today we got the answer from Canada. Alberta's Premier Jason Kenney said that they can provide 900 barrels a day. Not 900,000. We're getting 682,000 from Russia. So that would replace that Russian oil and then some. And the oil could be delivered to the U.S. by the first quarter of 2023. What are we in now? We're in the first quarter of 2022. That means 1 year. It would take 1 year to have that money, that pipeline flowing. And it goes it goes from Canada and it goes to Kansas. I want to say a city in Kansas. So there's the answer coming directly from the horse's mouth. I tried to Google it and find the answer. It was almost impossible. Okay, so this is what
You probably ended up on some special websites by Google that Keystone Pipeline,
You know, I've used Google for a long time, and they have absolutely changed their search results. It was impossible to find the answer. Okay, well, I'm just going to trust the guy who, he's the premier of Alberta, where the Canadian oil sands are, you know, Calgary and that. And that pipeline could be up and running, giving us 900,000 barrels of gas a year from now. You know, and just the thought that it's coming would take prices down. You know how
oh,
that
certainly.
Goes.
Oh, yeah. The expectation, right?
Okay. So down at the energy conference in Houston, Amos Hochstein, who he's the assistant advisor for energy security, he says the White House policies are holding back drilling are nonsense, blaming those on Wall Street who are insisting on dividends, blah, blah, blah. And he pointed his finger. He says the bottleneck is on Wall Street, and it's not a U.S. government problem. And he closed by saying they should call their financiers and tell them there's a war going on. The American public is paying the price. So now he's pointing to the banks saying that they won't, you know, fund, loan money. But, you know, their own... The woman that they nominated, Sarah Jane Raskin, who was going to be, they want her to be the overseer of the financial sector, she doesn't want the banks to loan money to the oil companies because of the climate change issues. So I hear two sides there. I hear both sides of the mouth coming, speaking there, and it's my understanding that it's very difficult right now for the oil companies to get funding for new projects. Now, on the other side of the discussion, the shale executives appointed to the administration's freeze on leases for drilling on new federal land. And Bloomberg was reporting today of how many permits that these companies have, especially Devon Energy, and there was one other one that hold most of the permits.
Is it Continental? I'm trying to remember.
Might be Continental Resources, Harold Hamm. Oh, it's actually EOG. They're sitting on thousands of federal onshore drilling permits, but the companies say, well, most of them are in New Mexico where they ain't going to allow. Okay, you may have a permit, but they are not going to allow that drilling. So, you know, you've got that in the mix. That was coming out of Bloomberg today. ConocoPhillips CEO says it would take 8 to 12 months to see the first drop of new oil if the company decided immediately to start pumping. So, yeah, I mean, it's not true that they can ramp it up right away, but this deal with the permits, they have all the permits they need. It's a matter of getting those permits okayed and approved, and I was looking at Canada today. Equinor, which is a big company over in Europe, a project off of Newfoundland was delayed again by the Canadian government. This has been going on for months and months and even years. So, you know, that's the other game. Well, you know, the environmental impact, it takes forever to get past all of that. So where's the answer? It seems to me like the easiest answer would be the pipeline within a year, but that's just not going to happen. So here we are. We just took 690,000 barrels off the market and no replacement. I just see upward pressure continuing on gasoline prices and oil prices. I don't see any relief in sight. I still think they're trying to get a deal done with Iran because that's all part of that nuclear deal. And yeah, that obviously isn't done yet. I still think that that's their ace in the hole that they're trying to get done. So, hey, there it is. There's what's going on. There is also talk. ConocoPhillips CEO said that we're getting to that, like you talked about yesterday, Barry, demand destruction. He says oil prices are so high that we're encroaching upon the area of demand destruction. Well, you know, I got to think twice before I take the boat out to the reef and catch some bottom fish. You know, that's about 100 gallons of gas to do that, $500, $600, something like that. There is some demand destruction taking place right now. So that's all of the forces that are at work here. And then when we come back, there's one more big one, supply chain disruption in the oil energy industry, too. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. The Dow holding on to its gains right now. It's up 600 points, 1.9%. I'm seeing a lukewarm move in the financials and the banks. That's mostly on the back of higher interest rates today. I'm seeing some mild profit taking in the energy sector and the gold sector. And I'm seeing a lukewarm move in the tech stocks, about 2%. You know, you look at Apple, you look at Amazon, the charts of those stocks to look, well, Amazon, for instance, Netflix, they look terrible. Meta, Facebook, they don't look good at all, but they're up 2% today. So I call that a very lukewarm, tepid bounce so far. But I've got a long day ahead of me looking at a lot of things. Okay, now back to the oil issue. Here's what I think the elephant in the room is. Let's go back to Equinor and Canada for a minute. You know, my people, Gunderson, they came from Lillehammer, where they had the Winter Olympics in Norway many years ago. But my ancestors on my father's side came from Norway in about the 1830s, ended up in Wisconsin, Minnesota. That's why so many of those Minnesotans love me up there, Barry. Or they throw snowballs at me, one or the other. But anyways, that's where Equinor is. It's a big Norwegian oil company, $100 billion, okay? And they got a project off of Newfoundland and Labrador. They've again, Canada's government has again postponed making a vital decision on Equinor's planned $9.5 billion Bay du Nord oil development offshore Newfoundland and Labrador. Okay, so in my opinion, here's the elephant in the room across the world, basically. Canada's Ministry of Environment and Climate Change said it extended the decision-making period to provide more time to review the considerable amount of complex information. And in other words, they're never going to approve it, from what I can see here. On the other hand, you've got the environmental activists been campaigning against Equinor's plan, complaining the development runs counter to the government's decarbonization agenda. And I would just say worldwide, basically, except Russia, you know, and China. There's a decarbonization agenda. So any project as far as increasing supply of oil is an uphill battle. To me, that is the elephant in the room there.
Yeah, and before all this, and we've talked about it, you know, long before the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I mean, that, you know, the oil industry has been, you know, I've seen estimates of, you know, essentially underfunded by, you know, up to $3 trillion over the last 10 years. So, you know, it's just essentially it's an area that's been underinvested. Part of that underinvestment is why you have some of these, you know, regional, especially in the fracking areas where, you know, now they have agreements with their shareholders that essentially, you know, they're only going to pump so much. Their dividends are going to be, you know, this much, meaning they can only reinvest so much back into the business because, you know, what, you know, because of what you don't want to happen, which always happens in the oil industry, right? As prices go up, eventually, you know, supply goes up because people pump more to get, you know, get a higher higher per barrel price, and then the price comes down. So you have these boom and bust cycles. And, you know, frankly, you know, a lot of these oil companies, you know, kind of have agreements with their shareholders now to prevent that boom and bust cycle. And then you couple that with underinvestment over, you know, probably the last 10 years or so, and you know, we're in the situation that we're in.
Yeah, well, I foresee an energy crisis going forward. I really do. I mean, in a lot of areas, especially Europe, they're in a real bad way because they're dependent upon Russia for so much. So anyways, you know, and here's just one other thing. I mean, it's also become obviously a big political issue. This, back to the Keystone Pipeline, Alberta Premier Jason Kenney talking about the Keystone Pipeline. His opinion, okay, he says during a disaster like this, national security and the interest of the economy must prevail. The oil pipeline is connecting Alberta. It's Steel City, Nebraska, that's it. And then it goes to Cushing, Oklahoma. It was canceled under Obama, only to be revived under Trump, and then canceled again by Biden. In fact, Biden did it on day one of his presidency. So there you go. There's where we sit. No solution that they can come to. And in the meantime, I just see upward pressure on energy prices going forward. U.S. refiners, they're doing great. Valero, Delek, Holly, Frontier, PBF, they were up. They're just exploding to the upside right now because they have that more of a margin in there now. Record demand, reduced supply have shown that the refinery margins with the price difference between oil and oil products like gasoline and diesel eclipsing recent highs. So their margins are exploding. Well, not really. I mean, they make a pretty thin margin, comparatively speaking, on a relative basis. So that's another way to look at playing the energy trade is through the refining stocks.
And keep okay. in mind, yeah, keep in mind, summer gas prices, right, tend to be roughly 30% higher, right, than the other parts of the year. So you're looking, you know, add another 30%, right, basically just from a seasonality standpoint, forget supply and demand, and, you know, in terms of reformulation of refined gasoline for summer months, I mean, it's a, you know, you're already looking at, you know, those prices increasing just based on, you know, a seasonality effect.
And let's not forget that yesterday there was one firm that predicted it would could take 1 to 2 points off of GDP, those high oil prices next year. So it could really, really creep into the economy and even could put the economy into a recession between higher interest rates in the Fed and high oil prices. That's not a good combination there. Okay, there's the crypto story. There was an accidental release of a coming executive order by Janet Yellen. Whoops. Currencies across the cryptoverse took off overnight after the inadvertent publishing of remarks from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen in a statement that was posted to the Treasury's website, which has since been deleted. I'm sure somebody's got a copy of it out there.
Yeah.
Yellen voiced a balanced approach. In other words, yeah, we think we can live with these, to the development of the crypto sector, as well as a constructive stance on regulating the industry. So, you know, that's why you're seeing this big move in the $2 trillion crypto market. Now, over to grains. Goldman Sachs hikes their grain price outlook in the sharpest shock since the 1970s. Well, we're seeing that same thing with oil. Global grain prices are set to rise further, they say, in the sharpest shock since the 1970s. Goldman raised its forecast grain prices, seeing corn climbing to $7.75 per bushel, soybeans $17.50, and wheat $12.50. We see clear upside pressure across global grain curves. And, you know, another big factor is I don't know if they're going to be able to plant in the springtime there in Ukraine, unless they clean up that mess and, you know, end the war, you may not even have a crop out of Ukraine. That would be a huge disaster. That's about a third of the world grain supply. Well, and then you've got the cost of fertilizer also, which is booming. Okay, Amazon, they're pulling out of Russia. Also, they could be probed for criminal obstruction by Congress. Apple announced some new low-priced phones yesterday. The stock has a very tepid, lukewarm reaction to that, barely moving at all. Let me just check in on both Apple and Amazon, a couple of bellwethers in the tech industry. Yeah, Apple is in a downtrend. Today's bounce is just a little bit of a bounce and keeps Apple in a pretty sharp downtrend for the last several months. And Amazon has been in a severe downtrend, remains in a severe downtrend, and is testing its last little bastion of support there at 2,700. It's come down from 3,700. It's down 1,000 points and does not look very good from a chart point of view. Okay, there are some stocks here in the news today. We'll get to those when we come back. You've got a software stock that's soaring after they reported better than expected results. I'm seeing some of the momentum names that I have no interest in. You've got Carvana today. You've got Coinbase, Li Auto. They're all up about 12 or 13%. That's speculative trading there. That's not investing. You're seeing the travel stocks all up today on the drop in oil prices, like Booking and the airlines and the cruise ships. I have no interest there. I'm still looking for something that looks interesting to me here today. Very weird day in the market so far. We'll be back, try to make some sense of it in the final segment. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson and chartered financial analyst Barry Kite. Well, Barry, I've been up since 5 a.m. looking, reading stories, looking at charts, doing a lot of work and research. And, you know, there's a lot of questions out there right now. Has oil peaked? Is it time to cash in on the oil stocks? You're seeing a little bit of that today. You've seen the fertilizer stocks roar to new highs. Is it time to cash in on that trade? Is it time to go back into the Carvanas of the world and the Teladocs of the world? I'm just going to tell you which way I'm leaning. I feel like, you know, the more information you have, the better inspiration and the better decisions that you can make. I lean towards, I'm just not interested in these tech stocks that are bouncing today. I don't like their overall trends at all. I don't like rising interest rates. And I don't like the fact that, you know, the economy is being threatened by this runaway inflation right now. So that's my first bit of that's me. Okay, and you're free to agree with disagree or agree with me. I mean, go ahead. It's very tempting. Look, I'm just as tempted as anybody, Barry, to step back into a Shopify, Teladoc, Etsy, Upwork, a lot of those stocks that work during the shutdown, Zoom technology, and make a quick buck. I just don't see the long-term prospects for those. Maybe a quick trade or whatnot, but that's not really what I'm interested in. As I looked at the oil situation, I looked at every side of that oil situation, from Alberta to Newfoundland to Labrador to Norway to Europe to Texas to the Keystone Pipeline. I think there's still upwards pressure on the energy prices. I think it's only going to get worse, because I think even though you may get the demand destruction, there's a certain amount of demand that will never go away.
Right.
Exactly.
You still need it. And you know who can't control the gas prices? The Fed. I mean,
no.
You know, we know that, you know, in terms of them, you know, raising rates at least a bit over time. And, you know, to me, you know, you've hit on a lot of it. It's really, you know, kind of you know, policies and decisions, whether it's here in the U.S., whether, you know, really it's a global policy decisions, and a combination of all of those over an extended period of time, combined with geopolitical risks and of Russia invading Ukraine, mash all that together, and that's where we're at in terms of oil prices. It's really, you know, to me, that piece of inflation is out of the Fed's control, which you know, it's
that's not a great spot
to be in.
That's a big piece of the producer price index and the CPI. So, you know, stocks, I think too, with a tilt towards natural gas, like Devon Energy and EOG and Apache APA. And then some of the, like Continental Resources, good old Harold Hamm there out of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, even though it's an uphill battle, I mean, in the old days, okay, before all the climate change and everything, and we could have ramped up the production. It could have been ramped up. But under the new, you know, the current administration and administrations around the world, including Canada and Europe in particular, they're not real anxious to ramp up their oil supplies. They're trying to get people off of oil which that's gonna be an ugly, ugly transition. Trying to transition to the renewables, it won't be pretty. I'm not selling my oil. I would use this opportunity to buy some of them. Okay.
Well, yep. And my thing is, and just look at, you know, and all of this is under an orderly market. I mean, I encourage folks to go read the story about nickel. That essentially is a piece of a market that is broken down in terms of, essentially they're closing the market till at least the 11th for nickel. I mean, that's when you get into these, kind of extended commodity prices, number one, certain traders and certain hedgers get in trouble, then, of course, makes these markets cease to trade based on supply and demand, and they start, traded upon fear and or, short covering or what have you. I mean, take a look at that story, and that's, that tells you where things could go, right?
And that nickel is needed for all of the electric vehicle batteries.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a big problem. Okay, and I would think I have the same opinion on the, I thought long and hard about, we've got some huge profits in those fertilizer stocks, and I looked at our tip ranks. We're number 206 in the world today out of 8,100. I think that it's an opportunity to buy. I don't think there's any relief in sight for those fertilizer stocks because Ukraine and Russia certainly aren't going to kick in their normal supply. And I feel the same way about the gold stocks. I think when's the CPI? Thursday?
Tomorrow. Yep, we'll get it tomorrow. We'll see what people
10%?
Think of. 10%? We'll see what people think of 7 or 8 again. And what that kind of how the market digests that, especially when there's got to be more inflation built in with that doesn't even include where gas prices are currently, where food prices are currently and or going based on wheat and other corn and other things that have gone up since prior to this print.
Well, so there you have it. That's our analysis. And I've got a lot to look at today. I'll probably be pretty busy, more on the buy side, definitely, than on the sell side of what I currently own. Had a lot of new clients come aboard. Someone asked me, Bill, should I be buying this right now? And subscribers also. I said, look, I tell you exactly. I send out an alert when I'm buying. Because we always have new people coming in, and I have to get them invested too. And I do it one at a time. When I see that right time, that pullback that interests me, I put all the new people and start accumulating positions for them too. That even though we already own them in our portfolios, they don't own them yet. I don't throw you into all 30, 25 stocks on day one. You're going to be methodically trickled in. So I see today as a buying day, depending on what you're buying. All right. You can get the newsletter. I'm already thinking about it for this week. You get 2 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. Barry has been busy talking to people that aren't happy with what their advisors are doing. Have interest in us, you can reach us at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. It's going to be a busy day. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.